I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, the Department of Homeland Security now commenting on the murder of a Washington father at the hands of an illegal alien. Plus, angry men using threats and violence to force boys into girls' spaces, and some of them are thankfully reaching the find-out stage of their actions. And Congressman Dan Newhouse of Washington's 4th District announces his retirement, I think a surprise for some. We'll discuss that and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. A ton to get to today. We also have an interview about a new bill that was proposed in Olympia that is the result of our whistleblower report on the abuse of community reinvestment funds meant for members of the Black community to buy a home. So a lot to look forward to on the show today. I do want to start with this breaking news that came out this morning about Congressman Dan Newhouse of Washington's 4th District, a Republican. He announced his retirement, which, you know, last time he was on the record with us, he said he planned to seek another 2 years. Of course, it's midterm year. And so kind of time is running out, right, to decide whether you're going to run again. So this will come as a surprise to a lot of people, given his public statements about running for another term. I'll read what he put out. He said, "I'm announcing today that I will not seek re-election to the U.S. House of Representatives. Serving the 4th District of Washington has been the honor of my life, and this decision comes with no reservations or remorse, only gratitude for the tremendous opportunity to have represented my home state in Congress. After 25 years of public service, including more than a decade in the House, I'm grateful to the Washingtonians who put their faith in me, as well as the colleagues I have served with on both sides of the aisle. Public service takes many forms. As I look forward to this new chapter and ways I can continue to serve my community and this great nation, I can do so with confidence that there are now qualified and serious people expressing interest in this office. Central Washington will have a strong, capable leader to whom I can pass the torch." Goes on to thank his family, ending with "God bless America, God bless the people of the 4th District of Washington." So this is going to get a lot of national attention today for the fact that Congressman Newhouse is one of the very few Republicans who voted to impeach former President Donald Trump back in 2021. And I think at that time, you know, it came as a surprise to a lot of people only because he is, and I think it is still fair to say, one of the more conservative members of Congress. I remember having him on at Fox 13 at the time when that happened, and him, you know, just saying he felt like it was the right thing to do. And I know that he's gotten a lot of grief from the President of the United States, from Republicans, for that vote, and that has never really relented. And as a result, he's faced challenges every time he's run for re-election from the right and from individuals who have the support of the President of the United States. So maybe that just became untenable to continue to have to go through these really hard-fought re-election campaigns and being challenged by your own party and having sort of the right flank of your party really never forgive you for that impeachment vote. But one thing I'll say about Dan Newhouse, he never made that a personality trait. There were several Republicans who voted to impeach President Trump who made that a core central part of who they were moving forward. He kind of did it and then he let it go and then he moved forward. And I don't think he really got credit for doing that. And I will say on a personal basis, I've got to know Congressman Newhouse fairly well over the last couple of years. He really is an A-plus human being. He really is an A-plus human being. You can disagree with his impeachment vote, but he is a good, good man. And I think that the number of people in Congress who are genuinely good people is dwindling by the day. Also, I don't know, I could probably share this story publicly. I don't think he'd mind before we get to our top story of the day. First time I met him, he called me a bitch. Yep, but it was a joke. And it was actually really funny because I didn't know, I'd done interviews with him before, and he's always kind of stoic and calm, you know, very professional. And, you know, he wasn't a member of Congress or a politician who I would joke around with before or after interviews. And I had just started this show. So I'd left my TV job. I just started this show. And I was out in Eastern Washington and his team had arranged for us to do an interview. And at the time, the impeachment vote was still very new. And I think that his team was very concerned that I was just going to only ask about the impeachment vote, right? And they didn't tell me I couldn't. They didn't say anything like that, but I think they were very worried about that. And so we went and we were at this small radio station in Eastern Washington, and his team was supposed to meet us there. But I think one of them got lost or something. They couldn't find it. So Congressman Newhouse and I started this interview without them. And then they couldn't get in once we started. So we did this whole interview without his team like watching it. And we get done and they're, you know, waiting in the hallway, like hopefully, you know, it didn't just focus on impeachment. And I joked them. I said, well, we just talked about impeachment the whole time. And he goes, yeah, she was a real bitch. And they just laughed. And I don't know if they thought we were serious, but I was just like, oh, I like this guy. So it was just a really funny moment. And we've become pretty close ever since. So congratulations on retirement to Congressman Newhouse. I think we will learn more in the coming days. I know there are some people waiting in the wings to run. This is a red district. This is a Republican district. So Republicans, I mean, I guess I say that, but the 8th used to be a red district, too. The 3rd used to be a red district, too. And now they're both held by Democrats. So I don't think that Democrats can win the 4th, at least in its current form. And so I imagine very rapidly we're going to have names coming out as to who will fill that void. And I also imagine very quickly President Donald Trump will have some not so nice things to say, like good riddance for Congressman Newhouse, which is his right to do, I suppose. All right. The Department of Homeland Security speaking out, putting out a statement about, I don't even like calling it a death. I'm calling it a murder of a Washington father at the hands of an illegal alien who never should have been allowed in this country and certainly shouldn't have been allowed behind the wheel of a big rig. Of course, we've been talking about this now for a couple days. This is the Indian national who we know. So his name's Kamalpreet Singh, came into the U.S. in 2023 through the southern border illegally, during the Biden administration's catch and release. So he was caught at the border and they still released him into the interior of our country with one of these promise to appear. Somehow less than 2 years later, he finds himself driving a big rig truck. He's on 167 in Washington State. And I call it a murder because according to all the information that we have from law enforcement and from the investigation, he showed no signs of even applying the brakes, had potentially been manipulating information on, you know, log hours to be able to drive longer hours, etc. Ends up ramming into the back, again, no braking, of a vehicle driven by 29-year-old father and husband Robert Pearson, who died at the scene. If you've seen the video and the photos, there was absolutely nothing left of Robert Pearson's car. And then to top it all off, the illegal alien who should never have been here, should never have been driving, was released on bail thanks to our state sanctuary policies. And they refused to honor an ICE detainer because we protect criminals in Washington State. The Department of Homeland Security putting out a statement about this, saying the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement announced Washington sanctuary politicians refused to honor a detainer for Kamalpreet Singh, a criminal illegal alien truck driver from India who caused a fatal multi-vehicle crash. Instead of honoring the ICE arrest detainer, these politicians chose to release this public safety threat back onto America's roads. Assistant Secretary Tricia McLaughlin saying, these demented and dangerous sanctuary policies have deadly consequences. Robert Pearson would still be alive today if the Biden administration hadn't released this illegal alien into our country. How many more Americans have to be killed before Democrat politicians start to put the public's safety ahead of politics? And at this stage today, I can't tell you where this guy is. I don't even know if DHS knows. They had a detainer, King County and the jails around here. They won't honor a detainer. It's against sanctuary policies. They can't do it because our politicians are spineless. So at this point, where is Kamalpreet Singh, who's facing up to 10 years in prison now for vehicular homicide, who's only been in the U.S. for 2 years illegally, got in here pretty easy. You don't think he can get out? You don't think that he's back in India already? You really think he's going to be in a courtroom and face justice? I don't think so. Hopefully the federal government can find him and detain him so he can go to trial for the murder of this young father. But anyone who still defends sanctuary policies is completely lost. Or anyone who at least doesn't say, hey, we need to amend these policies so they're not protecting dangerous people. I mean, even some changes at this point would be good. We still don't know, despite repeated requests to Immigration and Customs Enforcement and the Department of Homeland Security, the immigration status at this stage of the Sierra Leone national who stabbed a Bellevue police officer multiple times with a kitchen knife last week at the Bellevue Transit Station, a guy named Mohamed More Bangura, who's been charged with assault in the first degree and assault in the second degree. He also attacked a second officer who was able to thankfully duck out of the way of the knife. So the suspect is still alive, even though he was shot three times. And thankfully, both officers are still alive. But we covered this on the show yesterday, how every single mainstream legacy news outlet ignored the little detail that was very apparent in the charging documents, that they identified the attacker because on his person, he had his passport from Sierra Leone. The media also chose to ignore the fact that his last known address was a homeless shelter in Seattle. So now we have an immigrant, illegal or legal, we don't know yet. We're waiting for the federal government on confirmation. Somebody who's from a different country, Sierra Leone, is leeching off our system, is here homeless, and is luring police to a transit station so he can stab them to death. And the media, of course, covers for the Sierra Leone national homeless guy trying to stab police officers to death and hiding this information. But one thing I want to point out as we await sort of confirmation about, I don't think it matters either way. If he's illegal, that would not surprise me one bit. If he's legal, we still are in the midst of a conversation about, is all legal immigration good immigration? And one thing I noticed, President Trump put out this executive order a couple days ago that further restricted entry into the United States from certain countries. Guess what one of those countries are that he's now added to this list? Sierra Leone. So here we got this guy, and this was restricting or limiting the entry of foreign nationals to protect the security of the United States. And this is something that President Trump has already started looking at certain countries like Afghanistan, Burma, Iran, Libya, Yemen, in saying that we are dramatically restricting, if not altogether prohibiting, the entry of individuals from those countries into the United States, either on a visitor basis or any sort of visa basis or an immigrant basis, etc. And they are continuing to take a look at other countries of concern. And it says the proclamation directed the United States government to partially restrict and limit the entry of nationals of the following seven countries: Burundi, Cuba, Laos, Togo, Turkmenistan, Venezuela, and Sierra Leone. So the president has concerns about, and I think Sierra Leone is like 80% Muslim country. I think now the president has reason to believe, he says, and the Secretary of State, that individuals from those nations, including Sierra Leone, are perhaps pose some sort of significant or special threat to the United States. And so, I mean, and it's not a coincidence necessarily. Now we have this guy, same time, Sierra Leone, who's luring police officers in the United States and attempting to stab them to death. So I think it's very, very significant that that country is on the list of restricted nations now. Will the media cover that and cover why? No, they'll just call Trump racist for, oh, you're trying to restrict people from Sierra Leone. You're a racist, and won't talk about anything related to the attack of the Bellevue officers. So speaking of all of this, coming up this week, great timing, by the way, we had for a few days had a interview scheduled with Harmeet Dhillon. Harmeet Dhillon is an assistant attorney general for the Civil Rights Division of the Department of Justice under Pam Bondi. And we've already taped the interview. She's appearing on Sundays with subscribers this week. So we talked to her about all these cases, all these cases involving our failed sanctuary policies, involving dangerous illegal aliens. And she said at the end of the day, there is one surefire way to try to stop this from happening.
Ultimately, I do agree that it is a massive violation of the civil right of every citizen to have all of these illegal aliens living among us, some of whom are violent and threatening us. But there isn't sort of a civil rights statute per se that addresses that particular issue. But wherever we have instances involving, crimes that are motivated by hate or religion, much of the anti-Semitism in this country is coming from people who are not here permanently, students, people on student visas. Those visas can be revoked. People can be removed from the country for their activities. People can be disallowed from entering the country for their activities in the first place. And so we have stepped up at the ICE level and State Department level, I should say, review of applications for visas in our country, and review is being required of social media of people. And so we can hopefully keep people out who are coming in through the front door. And we have slowed, if not stopped, the flow of people across the southern border and the northern border as well, for the very reasons you've articulated. And so I think Americans need to be united in insisting that people who come into our country should come with our permission, should leave when they're asked to leave, if they're not here beyond their, if they try to stay beyond their permission. And they should learn our language and our customs, and they should assimilate into American culture. That's important.
Yeah, and she says basically vote better. At the end of the day, presidents will come and go. Some might be more committed to this, less committed. But if we're concerned about our sanctuary policies and the fact that our neighbors are being murdered by illegal aliens who shouldn't be here, then at the end of the day, we have to vote for people who don't support policies like that. So the Assistant Attorney General of the United States, Harmeet Dhillon, will join me on Sundays with subscribers. We talk about these issues. We also talk about the federal government's ongoing efforts to dismantle Antifa and the current lawsuit against our state for a refusal to hand over full information about our voter rolls and registered voters in the state of Washington. So we cover a lot of ground. We had her for about 20, 25 minutes. Appreciated her taking so much time. But so much of what the federal government is doing right now is relevant to Washington state. So much of what the federal government is doing, from the sanctuary, from the Antifa and the left-wing violence and the fight against DEI. I also talked to her about the fight to protect girls' sports and fairness in girls' sports and Title IX and radical gender ideology. I mean, man, you could have an assistant attorney general of the United States dedicated just to Washington. You could have a whole task force here to try to dismantle some of the nonsense. So Harmeet will join us on Sundays with subscribers if you'd like to sign up to catch that interview. All right, coming up next, I would say this is good news. We continue to see and really an escalation of attacks against signature gatherers who are trying to protect girl sports and parental rights. And in the last few days, we are now seeing some consequences for the individuals who are engaged in that kind of conduct. We have some breaking news in that regard. First, I have told you guys, take the First Mark Challenge, especially during the holidays, if you maybe have a few days off, where you can take time to reach out to First Mark, say, hey, Brandy's been encouraging me to take the First Mark Challenge, schedule some time. You'll go over your current insurance, talk about your insurance needs, and then they'll go out and they'll shop the market for you and come back with their recommendations. The most common thing we hear back from undivided viewers and listeners is they could tell that they're dealing with an honest company who's looking out for their interest, and then usually saving hundreds of dollars a month, which equates to thousands of dollars a year, like undivided viewer Christine. She was worried because she has this complex, a lot of stuff to insure. Two businesses, house, three cars. She had a carrier that was dissolving. She goes to First Mark finally after hearing me nag about it, ends up saving $10,000 a year. So don't wait a year to find out that you could have been saving $10,000 a year. Take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. No one attacks my friend, Andre Scott, and gets away with it. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So you guys will remember Andre Scott. Andre is a paid signature gatherer, and this is what he does for a living. He goes around the country and he collects signatures for ballot measures and initiatives, brings employees with him as well. And so Let's Go Washington, in this latest round of signature gathering for the Initiative to Protect Girls Sports and the Initiative to Restore Parental Rights, they're relying less on paid signature gatherers. They are doing a lot of by mail to people who they know will sign the initiatives, but they still have a contingent of paid signature gatherers out there. And one of them is Andre Scott. And you'll be familiar with him because he was on our show after a Walmart employee in Covington stole sheets of signatures from him and tried to destroy them.
This is what I recovered. I was right here. I had my canopy up and the guy was like, hey, man, look what you got going on here. Can I sign the petition? And I handed him the deck and he just took off running that way.
Yeah. So then the police found out it was a Walmart employee, and we did this whole story on it because they didn't arrest the employee, but they referred the case for charges. We're waiting for an update on that. But after that happened, we had Andre became kind of a local celebrity out collecting signatures. You know, we had him on the show to talk about what he's been dealing with out there, but also about the fact that this isn't just a job for him. He really believes in these initiatives that he's out collecting signatures for. Do you support these initiatives, the idea behind them?
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. I support them. Myself, I've got two daughters myself. That's one of the passion that drove me to do this. It's just not about the money. In order to do canvassing, ma'am, you have to have a certain passion. You have to have it. There's got to be something in the initiative that you've got to like and want, you know, for yourself before you could give it to the public.
Yeah, so we just fell in love with Andre instantly. All his yes, ma'am. Yeah, very polite, very kind. People would start coming out up to him in public, you know, talking about, oh, I'm sorry, this stuff is happening to you. Well, here's the deal. Andre was assaulted yesterday in Woodinville. He was outside the Hagen doing his thing, and an unhinged dude assaulted him and had to be pulled off of him. Think about this. Our friend Brian Haywood with Let's Go Washington was the first one contacted about this by Andre. Andre let the organization know that, hey, this just happened. You know, the police are involved. Brian said, this guy, pictured left if you're watching, came out swinging at Andre. A lady had walked up. So two things happened back to back. A lady walked up and tried to tear up signature sheets. And then immediately after that, this guy came up and attacked Andre, wouldn't stop hitting him. So a bystander pulled him off, got that picture of him. This dude runs away and escapes. However, somebody got the license plate number. So police were called. And Brian said, I'm told they picked this guy up at his house because Andre is pressing charges. And indeed, we just got confirmation about a half hour before coming on the air today that that individual has been arrested by Woodinville Police, which is part of the King County Sheriff's Office. We got a note from the Woodinville Police Chief saying, kind of giving an explanation as to what happened. And we're waiting for this individual's name because I will name and shame him until the end of time because no one lays a hand on Andre or anyone trying to participate in the democratic process. We're waiting for a full police report. But Woodinville Police told us this. We had been called several times about the signature gatherer at the Hagen, but the signature gatherer has been obeying laws, store policies, and not impeding any customers. Yesterday, we arrested a person who struck the signature gatherer. A witness who saw the assault tried to keep the suspect there until police arrived. The witness gave 911 the license plate number from the suspect's vehicle as they were leaving. Police arrested the suspect as they arrived at home. The suspect was booked into jail for misdemeanor assault. So that is very good news and very quick action by multiple bystanders, one of whom came in to pull this unhinged man off of Andre Scott. And then there was an individual who got a license plate, called 911. And so by the time this guy got to his house, Woodinville police were there waiting for him. And he was taken into custody. The case will now be determined by prosecutors as to whether they're going to move forward with an assault charge. And it sounds like there's multiple witnesses. Andre is pressing charges. I mean, but just think about that. You are using physical force as a man, and I use the phrase man very loosely here, very loosely. You are using physical force as a man to try to keep boys and in girls' spaces. What's the motivation for that? As a man to use physical force to try to make sure that boys can still be in girls' spaces. And this comes just after a couple days ago in Port Orchard, there was another quote unquote man, using that phrase very loosely, who threatened to shoot a signature gatherer in the neck.
Were you threatening to shoot me?
I'm not threatening to shoot you.
Oh, okay. You said bop bop. So was that a threat?
Watch your neck.
So you're threatening me. You said bop bop. So was that a threat?
Watch your neck.
And that guy's with his child. He's with his child and he's threatening to shoot a signature gatherer in the neck, you know, just like Charlie Kirk. Who does that? I have some breaking news on that front, though. We just heard back from the Port Orchard Police Department. The Port Orchard Police Chief tells us that the investigation into that individual for threatening to shoot a signature gatherer has been forwarded to prosecutors for a charging decision. So I would be shocked if they don't charge him because he admitted on camera, I was just saying, watch your neck. And so there's more than enough evidence to charge him in that case. But I just can't help but wonder. We've had multiple videos in the last week, specifically around men using threats and even violence to try to keep men in women's spaces.
Were you threatening to shoot me?
I'm not threatening to shoot you.
Oh, okay. You said bop, bop. So was that a threat?
Watch your neck.
So you're threatening me. What did you say to me?
Oh, I said you're still trying to look at kids' genitals.
No, not at all. I'm just collecting signatures to get things on the ballot and make it fair.
This guy is worried about what's in my pants.
Want to help get these on the ballot?
This guy is very concerned about what's in my pants.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
You weirdo.
So if you don't...
What is wrong with you?
I'm calling 911.
Okay, go ahead.
What's with unhinged men? What's with men who are obsessed, so obsessed with forcing themselves into women's spaces and forcing boys into girls' spaces that they would resort to that? If you don't like it, just walk by. You don't have to sign. That's democracy. Oh, but you got to threaten to shoot someone in the neck? You have to assault? You're so unhinged about it? You'll assault someone around multiple witnesses in broad daylight knowing you'll probably go to jail for doing so? Because you're that obsessed with forcing boys into girls' spaces as a man? I mean, we don't have a low-T problem. We have a no-T problem. Can you imagine? I mean, I'm sure that they're... I can't even imagine what their wives are like. I mean, or husbands or whatever. I mean, it gives me the ick to even think about being married to someone like that. It gives me the ick to think about back when I was ever dating someone like that. Those are not men. Those are not men. And the transgender one is probably happy that I'm saying that's not a man. It is, they are biological men. But real men don't use threats and violence to try to force themselves into women's spaces. Disgusting. I asked you guys on our daily subscriber show poll on Patreon, Locals, and X, if all of this that we've been talking about since late September has influenced your decision to either sign the initiatives in public or to actually go out and collect signatures in public places, given the harassment and the threats and the physical assault that you could face. So I asked, are you less likely, more likely, or no change? Nicole, does hearing about all of this, if you were sort of a passive viewer and you knew this was happening, would that make you less likely, more likely, or wouldn't influence whether you're willing to like walk up to one of these tables in public and sign or collect signatures in public?
I would probably make me a little bit nervous, but it makes me, I mean, I've been saying thanks for being here to all of the gatherers.
Yeah. And I think they like that because I've been doing the same thing.
So I definitely want to support them because of this nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, 15% of subscribers on Patreon are saying it makes it less likely for them.
So I can see how it's a deterrent.
Oh, 100%. Mm-hmm. And that's what they're doing. And they're celebrating it's it working. Behind the scenes. They're like, oh, our efforts are mm-hmm. working. Because I think there would be a lot more signatures at this juncture if those efforts weren't happening, not to mention all the pages that they've taken and tried to destroy or successfully destroyed or stolen that we never got back, right? But a lot of you are saying either no change or it makes it more likely. My answer is more likely, because you know me. I love a good, you're going to try to threaten me or intimidate me out of doing something. I am then going to do the exact opposite. Kathleen, I will not be bullied. I will sign any petition initiative that I believe in. Leland says, it makes it less likely if they occur on or in gun-free zones. So like if there's somewhere you can't bring a gun, then you have no way to protect yourself. And I think as a signature gatherer, I really worry for them because they're just sitting ducks. Because what this WA Families for Freedom does is they send out volunteers to locations in a rapid response setting to go and sort of combat signature gatherers. So given what's happening, now you know that these unhinged leftists know where you are. They know you're going to be there for hours. And so that puts you in a really precarious situation, especially if you can't be armed or aren't armed. So it's a very scary thing. That in Andre, I mean, he's been through all sorts of stuff and still mm-hmm. continues to do it. I mean, I think at this point it's given him even more motivation beyond the fact that this is his job to continue to do it and not leave the state. And so if you see Andre out there, please well, and I would also say, and I'll read some more of your comments from the show poll in a moment, but I would say if you see Andre out and about, and I'm not going to give his location away where he's going to be the next couple of days because I think that would be counterproductive. I would tell him hey, if you have the time, hey, do you want me to stand here with you for a little bit? I know, and any signature gatherer, hey, I know you guys have been facing some harassment and stuff. Do you want me to stand with you for a little bit? And if you can spare 10, 20 minutes, they might love that. And so that's kind of a nice thing to do. Maybe. I mean, especially,
definitely deserves hazard pay.
Oh, hazard pay for sure. Well, we got to talk to Brian Haywood about that. Joe says it makes me more likely these F-tard protesters will stop being D-bags when they get smashed in the face. Okay. Only if you're acting in self-defense. I will never encourage proactive acts of violence, as you know, but you are absolutely more than welcome to defend yourself and to protect yourself. And some of these men, they're going down quick. Silly. You know what I'm saying? They're going down quick.
Isn't it funny that question, I think, is interesting from this perspective because I feel like our side, the people that we're talking to, want to avoid that kind of resistance and that just kind of nonsense and just want to go about their daily lives. And, and politics is not their daily life. And the other side, on the other hand, is looking for
a
battle.
This is their job.
Looking for a fight. Every day is a battle.
100%. Crazy. A couple from locals here. Greg says, I'd like to see them try to stop me from signing something or attending.
kick JJ. I'd press charges against anyone who harassed me and would love doing so for the principle of it.
Oh, I really hope that these follow through.
They need to stick, right? Sure. They need to stick. And of course, I have the ongoing case from the woman who threatened to come to my home over my support of these initiatives. And so there are some ongoing cases, but we want to make sure that prosecutors are actually charging them, because this is about protecting our democratic process, which Democrats say is so important. All right, Nicole, thank you. Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. But I think some of that is good news. We want police, and we're grateful to the Woodinville police, to the Port Orchard police, for taking those cases seriously and taking quick action to bring some sort of resolution, or at least get them over to the prosecuting attorney's office. But yeah, if you're out and about and you see signature gatherers, thank them for what they're doing, and offer to stand with them for a little bit and see if they're dealing with harassment or whatever it is. I think that would be a really, really nice gesture. All right, we have a great story. A state lawmaker has just introduced a bill that is in response to our whistleblower report about rampant self-dealing within a program meant to help the BIPOC communities in Washington state. So that state lawmaker will join us. We'll talk about what the bill would do. First, if you're thinking about selling your home, probably not around the Christmas time, but if you're thinking in the new year that you're going to start the process of selling your home, it's never too early to reach out to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com, because sometimes it takes a little preparation, you know, especially if you know that there are some cosmetic upgrades that you need to do to your home before it hits the market. And the nice thing is Wes and his team can take care of all of that for you. Hell, you don't even have to pay for these changes until closing, which I think takes the financial pressure of having to write big fat checks before you go sell your home, especially if you're trying to buy a new home in the process of selling your home. That can be extra stressful from a financial perspective. And Jay gives Wes and his team 5 stars. She says, truly a 5-star experience from start to finish. Wes and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. Over 3 years, Wes guided me through renovations, referred great contractors, and helped me make smart choices. Over 3 years, she had a lot to do to her home, but got the process started early, which I think actually helps with the stress of it. She said, when it was time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200 plus people. We got 4 offers and sold for $100,000 over asking. You will not find a better team. 5 stars from Ann J. for Wes Jones of sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com, it really just is a better way to sell your home. All right, so back in October, we released the first of multiple reports involving a whistleblower who came forward to expose rampant self-dealing within something called the Community Reinvestment Program. Our headline back in October, whistleblower, state equity program became a fund for personal enrichment. We called it a tangled web of self-dealing that has now caught the attention of both the State Department of Commerce and the Office of Attorney General Nick Brown. So to give you kind of an explanation, if you haven't heard our reporting on this, read that report or our subsequent follow-up reports, there is a program that's gotten $250 million in taxpayer funds in the state of Washington called the Community Reinvestment Program. This was the Democrats' answer to the war on drugs. And they said that they wanted to help communities disproportionately impacted by the war on drugs. So they were going to set aside $250 million, and it would be given through contracts with BIPOC organizations. BIPOC organizations would be contracted by the state to distribute taxpayer funds to BIPOC people to buy houses, to start businesses, to pay off even personal credit card debt. Now, the program itself is deeply flawed. I don't support it at all. But the administration of the program has been horrific, if not criminal. We pointed out examples of the Seattle Metropolitan Chamber of Commerce using that money. They were given millions of dollars through a contract with the state to get that money out to community members. Instead, they used a lot of it to help themselves, to help their family members. In one case, the daughter of someone with the Urban League got $350,000 free money from the taxpayers to purchase a home. A housing counselor with the Urban League got almost $50,000 in credit card debt paid off. And a lot of those payments to insiders or people affiliated with the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle came after they had told other members of the community that they'd run out of money, that the funds had run dry. And so as a result of our whistleblower and our whistleblower report, we know that the State Department of Commerce is looking into this. We also know that the Office of the Attorney General has been in contact with our whistleblower to continue to investigate. And so now we are looking at, okay, what can we do to stop this from happening again? Because it's not just, you guys know this, and I think a lot of the Smalley fraud, there is a lot of money in state contracts that went out during the period of, you know, race and social justice awakening in this country. And it was doled out without much thought, without much oversight, without auditing. And what you saw in, with the Somali fraud in Minnesota is you've got members of, you know, a black community that are getting all this money, no oversight, because you can't question where black people are spending taxpayer money, because then you'll be called racist. And so they, you know, knew that there were some inclinations that the Somali community was defrauding the Minnesota taxpayer, and people just ignored it. And now it might be as much as $1 billion that was defrauded from Minnesota taxpayers. So I think you're seeing a similar phenomenon here. And look, I'll give the State Department of Commerce and the Attorney General's office for at least seeming like they're looking into this. We haven't gotten an update from them on where those investigations stand. But I also think that there is this element of, we don't want to look into this because race and social justice. We don't want to look into this because we'll be accused of racism. But that hasn't stopped Republicans in Olympia from saying, oh, we're looking into this and we're going to introduce some bills to try to fix this. So one of those bills was just pre-filed. It'll be for this coming legislative session in January. It is House Bill 2153. And it is co-sponsored by two Republican state representatives, April Connors and Andrew Barkus. Both of them in their day jobs have ties to real estate and housing. And so this would specifically address one of the many concerns raised in our whistleblower report, and that is the stacking of multiple state programs to help one person. For example, I mentioned the daughter of an individual at the Urban League who got $350,000 toward the purchase of a home. Her name is Asia Williams. Well, that money came from multiple BIPOC nonprofits and dipped into multiple different programs to help this one person. Instead of saying, no, you get help from one program meant to help black people buy houses, and that way we can help more people. And so that's what this bill is meant to do. So we asked Representative April Connors, one of the co-sponsors, to come on the show today and explain, you know, not only the ins and outs of the bill and the problem here, but also whether she thinks she can get bipartisan support for it. Representative Connors, welcome to Undivided.
Thank you for having me today. Excited to be on the show.
Yeah, well, thanks for introducing this. I think we're all hoping that something happens this session. I know I had on Senate Minority Leader John Braun, and they were going to reintroduce two bills just more generically related to oversight of contracts. So tell me about the genesis of this.
Well, it actually started with your expose that you had put out, Randy, and I am a real estate agent by trade. I've been a real estate agent for 25 years in the Tri-Cities, and the integrity of the business and what we do is really important to me. I'm also a huge proponent of down payment assistance programs, and I have one, as you know, that's been on the table for the last 3 years, the Homes for Heroes bill, which I will also be doing an amendment to that bill to make sure that it can't be stacked. But when your expose came out, it immediately, especially the real estate piece of it and how the real estate agents could maybe be involved allegedly, really struck home with me. And the fact that we have so many homeowners out there that would love to be able to have the down payment assistance help, that it's not being divided between all the homeowners, that people are allowed to stack them, and it's helping less people in Washington. We can talk about the different types of homeowners assistance programs, but as you know, typically a down payment assistance program, or maybe you don't know, is about 3%. And it is really just it's a hand up for people in their communities. Like I said, my Homes for Heroes bill is a bill that is for police officers, firefighters, people that we need to have that are first responders to live and work in our communities. Now, when they sell that house, they typically, except for the Covenant Home Ownership Program, have to pay that 3% back when they sell the home, which is what it is intended to do. It's intended to get you into a home, but then to repay that forward to another buyer as you move through the process of moving up in your house. And so I think a down payment assistance programs can work wonderfully, but this is an absolute horrible ability. I'm calling it stop the stack. Like, we should be able to stack down payment assistance programs in the state.
Yeah. So you said, you know, you understand the need and the usefulness of down payment assistance, especially if it's a program that's paid back. But when we're talking about both of these programs, community reinvestment funds, and then the Covenant Home Ownership Program, which has now been altered so that the loan is forgivable if you live there for long enough, do you support those programs as they are today?
No, I do not.
Is it because of the racial element?
That piece and the forgiveness piece and the amount of money that they're loaning out, most people are receiving around. If you didn't know, as state representatives, we also get appointed to serve on certain committees and boards. I actually serve on the Covenant Homeownership Oversight Committee. Mm-hmm. And so I get to see all of those numbers. I get to see that it's about an average of $130,000 that we're basically, you know, providing down payment assistance or forgiveness to in the state. And so I sit on that oversight committee. So I was helped lead the charge on that debate on the floor because, Brandy, on that committee, what we were hearing in the oversight committee is the program hasn't even been out in the community long enough yet, but we're going to increase the amount we're going to give away, percentage of your income. We're going to go ahead and do loan forgiveness. And so I was the voice of, hey, I can't support what you're doing in this, and help lead the floor battle to try to stop it. Some changes were made on the floor, but the race-based piece of the program, the amount of money they're giving away, the down payment assistance being at up to $150,000 is to me, it's not right.
Yeah, so we had one example that we gave, and of course, then there's the self-dealing aspect of it, which I know that the Department of Commerce and the Attorney General's office are looking into. But one example that we gave, a young woman named Asia Williams, whose mother is very high up at the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle and has involvement in the doling out of community reinvestment funds. Asia Williams got $350,000 gifted toward the purchase of a home, and that is because it was stacked. She got CRP funds from her mom's job. She got CRP funds from another BIPOC nonprofit. She got Covenant Home Ownership funds, etc. Did you guys ever know, or did it ever come up as a possibility that these programs would be stacked in that way?
I have not heard that was a possibility at all. Once your expose came out and I started working on legislation for this bill, I had our nonpartisan staff do a lot of work to see what could be stacked and what couldn't. And basically, at this point in time, there's no regulations against not stacking. I think it should be a bipartisan bill. I think we should be able to look at it as, hey, this, we want to help. We wrote the legislation. We want to help the most. If we're going to give away these state dollars, or at least loan these state dollars, we should be making sure we're helping the most people that we can be helping, not just helping one person get $350,000.
Yeah, and that's not just coming from you as a Republican or us as white ladies, because I'm sure that'll be brought up too. Actually, Bird Bar Place in Seattle, when they realized that people were coming to them for money and then going to other places for money as well, the woman in charge of that BIPOC nonprofit put out an internal email saying, this is not what we're supposed to be doing. We shouldn't be using these funds to help a select few. We should be using them to help as many as people as possible. So there are BIPOC nonprofits who did the right thing when they realized this was happening, and they have the same sentiment that you do. So I would hope that those are individuals who would support this effort as well, because as you said, you're not going in there saying, let's cancel these programs, although I think that they should be canceled or seriously amended, but we all live in reality and you're not in the party in power, but we are saying, like, let's help more people with them as intended. Do you anticipate being able to get any Democrat co-sponsors?
You know, I'm shopping it now, and I do think hopefully we do still have some Democrats in the House that are a little more towards the middle that we'll see and hopefully sign on to it. So I am shopping it right now in hopes that we can get some. Like I said, like you said, it's not canceling the program. It's written to just put parameters on the program. So I'm hopeful.
Yeah, and there's demand from the Black community for this. When we initially did the story and the Metropolitan Seattle Urban League put out a statement on their Facebook, it's filled with people from the Black community in Seattle saying, I applied and you told me you ran out of money. I applied, you told me you ran out of money. You couldn't help me, you couldn't help me. And then it turns out they're helping insiders with, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars that could have been spread out among the community. So this should be a common sense bill that Democrats should be willing to fix a clear error in the program. So Representative Connors, thank you for doing this. I look forward to hearing debate. Do you think you'll get a, what committee would this go to for a hearing?
I'm assuming that the whole Covenant Home Ownership Program, down payment programs typically go through the House Housing Committee, which I'm on. So we'll be pushing to get a hearing there. You saw that Representative Barkas is my co-sponsor on it. He's, you know, firmly aligned with me on this, but we also believe this is kind of a first step, Brandy. I mean, it is about transparency to the public, where your dollar is going, what's happening. And so this is just a first step to trying to fix some of this.
Well, hopefully they give it a hearing. And I know I got a whistleblower who'd be itching to come testify at that hearing. So when and if that happens, I'll connect the two of you. So Representative Connors, great bill, common sense. We appreciate you introducing it and coming on to talk to us.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I will say that, you know, the whistleblower would certainly love to come down and testify, but we know that this isn't the only bill that, so Senator John Braun, Republicans in the Senate, they had two bills last year that would have improved that. If they had passed, you know, this wouldn't even be an issue. Basically, would improve the auditing process, would deal with conflicts of interest, in-state contracts. So I know they're going to reintroduce those this year. But when it comes to April Connors' bill, if the goal from Democrats is to help Black people get into homes, then this would help more Black people get into homes by making these changes. So I think you'll really know where, what their actual priorities are and where their loyalties lie if they won't pass this bill. One other sort of wrinkle to all of this is we look at, you know, are there going to be actually any consequences for any of this? So you remember our story covered really the Urban League of Metropolitan Seattle, but right after the story came out and the Center Square did a follow-up about the same sorts of issues within the Tacoma Urban League, there was a story that came out almost immediately that the Tacoma Urban League decided to place its CEO on paid administrative leave, Desiree Wilkins Finch. And Desiree Wilkins Finch is someone who I'd reached out to in relation to our investigation into how this money was being spent. And there were some accusations of maybe conflicts of interest or the same sort of self-dealing within the Tacoma Urban League. At the time, the Tacoma Urban League put out a statement about putting its CEO on paid leave while an investigation takes place, saying, "The board takes any concern related to the integrity of our operations seriously, consistent with our commitment to transparency and accountability. The board has initiated a confidential, independent, legal third-party investigative review to ensure that all questions are addressed through the proper process." So while that's all happening, and while the CEO, Desiree Wilkins Finch, is on administrative leave while they look into whether there's any impropriety, she just got like this big award for like Black business. And I'm just like, nomination. She's been nominated. The Tacoma Black Fund, which is an organization that she founded, which is part of the Tacoma Urban League umbrella and helps work with the Tacoma Urban League to get this money into the hands of people in the Black community. So they're all interlinked. It says, "We have been nominated for the Black-owned Business Excellence Ecosystem Champion Award." Good God. As she's on paid leave from the Tacoma Urban League, and as there are questions about whether there is self-dealing and impropriety in how the Tacoma Black Fund and the Tacoma Urban League administered millions of dollars in taxpayer funds, Tacoma Black Fund has been nominated for the Black-owned Business Excellence Ecosystem Champion Award. Okay. What do you do except just snort at something like that? Ridiculous. We'll get to national news coming up next. First, are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Should you be concerned about your retirement portfolio and whether it's exposed to too much risk? If you're questioning your portfolio and how it's positioned for these financial uncertainties, wouldn't it just be smart to get a second opinion? You can with Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review. Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital are focused on risk management. Built around the fundamentals of value investing, Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And also, did you know this? Another question for you. What other wealth management firm allows you to hear from their advisors directly? Not a lot of them, but with Zach Abraham, not only is he talking to us on Swamp Watch once a week, but he gives you free market updates every single day directly. So you can get market updates from Zach Abraham on his Know Your Risk podcast, YouTube channel, all his social platforms. Just go to knowyourriskpodcast.com and you can search Know Your Risk podcast across any social media network to find it. And while you're there, of course, schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio review, knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right. In some national news, yet another botched press conference about the unsolved Brown University shooting. they really should just stop talking, because at this point it gets worse and worse and worse every single press conference that they have. So a couple moments I'll play for you, and then I'll talk about these conspiracies that the internet has identified the shooter and the university is trying to cover up for it. University President Christine Paxton, she was asked about why sirens weren't deployed. They have these kind of emergency sirens for emergency situations. Listen to her response.
We also have a system of sirens. There are three sirens placed across campus. Those get activated when there is a broad-scale emergency and we want people to rush into buildings. In the case of an active shooter, activating that system could have caused people to rush into Barris and Holly. So that's not a system that we would ever use in the case of an active shooter. So,
okay. Just to follow up. Yeah. It does say on the website when it was launched that it is for an active shooter.
It depends on the circumstances and where the active shooter would be, but you don't want to ever get people rushing into buildings that might be the site of an active shooting.
That's it.
So she says, we would never use this for an active shooter. That's why the sirens weren't going off. We would never use it in a situation like that. And the guy points out, on the website, it says that you installed them for a situation like an active shooter. And she says, oh, well, it depends on the circumstances. These people are absolutely incompetent. The Providence police chief, Colonel Oscar Perez, who's been speaking at these briefings, he doesn't even seem to understand what kind of video of the gunman they have and where that video came from.
So the video that we showed you came from inside the building, and that's all we had at the moment. That's all we have at this moment.
Correct. Inside the building, though?
I'm sorry?
It's from the outside of the building.
So do you have video footage?
Yes.
Inside the engineering?
Both inside and outside. I'm sorry, just outside. That's all we have, not inside.
I mean, that does not instill any confidence. We have dead students. And police chief has no idea what he's talking about. The university president has no idea what he's talking about. The attorney general, Peter Noronha, has no idea what he's talking about. And his excuse for a university with a $7 billion endowment not having proper security footage is that, oh, this particular building was just old.
It doesn't come as a surprise to me, at least, that there are cameras in the newer part of the building. And there is video footage, okay? So there's the back part of the building, old part, and front part, new part. The shooting occurs in the old part towards the back, up towards Hope Street. In that older part of the building, there are fewer, if any, cameras in that location. I imagine because it's an older building.
Okay. I know that this is a surprise, but you can put new cameras on an old building. The camera itself doesn't care whether it's sitting on an old building, in a wall in an old building, or in a new building. Sure, you can integrate it maybe easier in new construction, but I'll tell you, there's a lot of people with old houses who have security cameras on their old houses. Because you can buy new technology for old things. So it's absolutely insane. And then he claims that they don't even have any idea what the motive is.
There is no information that the investigative team has about motive. Zero. Zero. There's nothing about, even if taking at face value what one or two witnesses may have said about what something was said, okay, and there are many witnesses that say nothing was said, there's nothing about what we know was perhaps said that indicates any kind of motive that is related at all to ethnicity or political outlook or culture. There's nothing at all that we know right now about that. And I think that is a dangerous road to go down, particularly in today's environment.
Dangerous road to go down to talk about the fact that two witnesses said he shouted Allah Akbar. That's more of a dangerous road to go down than him shooting people and killing them? And at what point do you cherry pick? If a witness said, oh, he went in there and shouted, this is for Trump, that wouldn't be immediately the headline in every news publication in America, and that the liberal AG and the liberal mayor and all these people would have said he was motivated by his love for Donald Trump. So not one, but two witnesses say he shouted, Allahu Akbar. Now, I get it that witnesses can be mistaken. I'm not saying you come out and you definitively say, without even knowing who the suspect is, this is what happened. But witnesses are saying that that's what happened. Why are you hiding it? Why will you refuse to say those two words in connection with this? You could just say, hey, we know that two witnesses have said that he shouted Allahu Akbar. We don't have video of that. You know, some witnesses say they didn't hear that. So we're looking at that as a potential motive. Can't you just say that? Literally, how hard is that? And when you won't acknowledge it and you won't even say it or repeat it, it just looks like you're hiding things. Now, I'm not going to get into this whole internet conspiracy. The internet believes it has identified the Brown University shooter as this like pro-Palestine nut job who goes to the school. They're using this like gait analysis to say he's got a very similar gait, and they're taking video from a protest and then video from him walking around. Yeah, wasn't it the, what was the news organization that used gait analysis and said they definitively identified the pipe bomber from January 6th, and it turned out not to be that person at all. So they just defamed this person as a pipe bomber using some gait analysis mechanism. So I'm just not going there. But it was funny because as soon as the internet started identifying this individual as the shooter, the university started taking down any pages referencing that individual, a student spotlight, taking down any sort of like any trail whatsoever of this individual at Brown University. And so the president was asked, you know, why are these pages being taken down? And the president acted like she had no idea. Oh, I don't know. Why are the pages being taken down? That's weird. And then came back and said, well, we have to protect this person. Anyway, it's all bizarre. No suspect that we know of. I can't even tell you from the video if that's a man or a woman. Mm-hmm. It might be maybe it's a transgender individual, but I can't even tell you definitively if it's a man or a woman. The video is atrocious. All right, I've got to talk about quickly this Vanity Fair debacle. So someone at the White House had the bright idea that they'd allow a reporter from Vanity Fair to kind of shadow Susie Wiles and other members of the administration to do this big piece on them for Vanity Fair. I don't know who thought that was a good idea. Do you ever think that Vanity Fair is going to do anything fair about the Trump administration? Like, what would give you that idea? But anyway, they did it, and the story and pictures are un-freaking hinged. So this picture is not so bad, although Susie Wiles' face looks like she's just like shocked by the image. But it's very clear that Vanity Fair set out to vilify the Trump administration and to paint them as literal, hideous psychopaths. So as part of this, they published all these close-ups. And by close-up, I do mean close-ups of all the major players in the administration. Oh my God. And first of all, it's just mean. It's mm-hmm. mean, it's petty, it's obviously not journalistic in any form or fashion. It's meant to embarrass them. I mean, especially when you look at the close-up of Caroline Leavitt, who's a beautiful young woman. They clearly did that to show, you know, her lip injection marks and all of that stuff. They did it to make her look like fake and phony. And Susie Wiles, they did that to make her look crazy. And I mean, you would have to toy with lighting, and I can see it on Marco Rubio's picture. I'm pretty competent with Photoshop and photo editing. I've met Marco Rubio in person. Like 1 foot away. He is an incredibly handsome man.
He is.
Very handsome. And J.D. Vance is very handsome as well.
Mm-hmm.
He does not look like that in person. The way they had to toy with shadows and contrast in order to make all of those pores stick out. And all of us have pores, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But I think this is really illustrated by a side-by-side someone posted of a profile that they did on Karine Jean-Pierre for Vanity Fair. And then the profile that they did on Caroline Leavitt.
Mm-hmm.
Look at that. Oh, Karine Jean-Pierre, the most incompetent press secretary in American history.
Mm-hmm.
Fashionable, there, posing, strutting in front of the White House. Glamorous shot. Caroline Leavitt, close up. I mean, that is so disgusting. It's lower than disgusting. It's mm-hmm. lower than the enemy of the American people. And look, maybe there was, you know, it was a bad decision to allow it. And even J.D. Vance said that. So J.D. Vance was responding to the Vanity Fair hit job. And he said, well, maybe we've learned a lesson.
And the last thing I'll say is if any of us have learned a lesson from that Vanity Fair article, I hope that the lesson is we should be giving fewer interviews to mainstream media outlets. So.
Yep. They're never going to be fair. And more, you know, I'll occasionally, whenever the Seattle Times or the Olympian or the Tacoma News Tribune or the Stranger is going to write an article that includes me in it, you know, they'll reach out for comment. And I'll usually just send them a smartass response mm-hmm. back. It's usually something that's just smartass because it doesn't matter what I tell them. They are never going to do a fair story. And I know that. So there's really no, like, I guess, what are you hoping for when you have an outlet like Vanity Fair that has been horrible to the president, to the president's family, to the first lady, has never had one positive thing to say at all? Do you think all of a sudden if you give them access, they'll just change their mind? Of course not. It's just not worth it. I don't think for conservatives or really even moderate Democrats in this climate to do an interview with any mainstream news publication is just going to come back to bite you in the ass. Oh, my God. And so I posted a solidarity with Caroline Levitt photo on social media of a close-up of my face. Now, to be fair, when I'm on set, I wear a ton of makeup. You could probably tell. But, you know, all of us have pores. As much as women try, we try all the products and all the things, you get right close up, I got some pore action and some wrinkle action going on. So that was my solidarity image for Caroline Levitt.
There were also some photos of Biden that they took in the middle of his term.
Yeah.
I mean,
made him look just like heroic.
Oh, he looked like he was 50 years old. And
good God.
On GQ.
But this has been a thing with Trump for a long time, where they always pick the most unflattering photo of Trump.
Oh, yeah.
He's doing something with his mouth. He's doing something that makes him look really extra orange or whatever it is. And they play with the lighting. They've always done it with President Trump. And that's intentional. It's very intentional. Mm-hmm. All right. We'll get to some comments from the stream on Congressman Dan Newhouse announcing his retirement. Anyone who's met you, Brandy, knows you are a very nice lady and not a bitch. Yes, he was joking, for the record, when he said that. But he'd always been very stoic and professional. And then he just lets out this, oh, she was a real bitch. And I was like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to like you, aren't I? We're going to be friends. He really is an A-plus guy.
He's always very kind. Like when you went to D.C. and he's always wanting to show people around D.C.
Yes, and his staff, I met his staff for drinks. Mm-hmm. And look, I can still cover him. You know, I can still do my job when it needs to be done. Mm-hmm. And but, you know, I have a good relationship with, you know, Democratic members of Congress as well. And, you know, some of them I like personally more than others. But Dan is just he's just a good guy. He really is. Mm-hmm. Old Sub Sailor, it's got to be depressing being a Republican. No power, no voice in the state legislature, no power, mm-hmm. no voice, no light at the end of the tunnel. Probably talking about April Connors in that comment. DHS blasts WAS sanctuary policies. Leland, victims of these crimes should sue the state. We need national attention and the DOJ to get involved. And I talked to Harmeet Dhillon about that in the interview that's airing on Sunday about like what recourse is there? I mean, what can citizens do? I mean, to me, it's a civil rights issue. Like we're at the mercy of our government to be attacked and killed or whatever it is by these people who are in the country illegally. And for those of us who don't want it, like what recourse is there?
She really gives the
why are you smiling?
The impression during that interview that she has like no sympathy for Washingtonians that vote for this nonsense.
Yes, 100%. Here. She was very
she's like, well, vote different than
right. She was very, now, I don't want to say harsh, but like she was in a no messing around mood. And so I sort of like, did I do something to her?
Yeah.
But apparently that's just how she is.
Yeah, that's just how. But I mean, I think dealing with or doing an interview in a state like ours, she's like, what are you going to do about it?
Vote different. Right. Vote different. We can't do everything.
You're a pain in my ass.
Right. Terry M., our governor should be charged as an accomplice to murder. On the signature gatherer attacked in Woodinville. Sally Joe, my daughter and I met Andre yesterday afternoon at Hagen. He was not pushy. He asked us if we would like to sign the initiatives, which we are totally are for. Some old man made a snarky remark, told him to get out. I cannot believe people nowadays. Anyway, Andre was wonderful. He's quite the gentleman. I hope they throw the book at the guy, or Batman. Book at Batman? Is that the guy's
Batman.
Name? At that man, maybe?
Batman, maybe.
It says Batman, maybe. That's disgusting. Go, Andre. We're Team Andre. Yeah, he really is a nice guy.
So sweet.
Carlene, isn't there a video already of this guy telling another signature gatherer to watch his neck? No, it's not the same guy. People are saying they look the same. I don't think they look the same at all.
Well, I did mention that they all have the same kind of look. Kind of this round face, beard.
Yeah.
They all kind of have the same look.
So to set the record straight,
not the same guy.
Rick, WAW has become a state of mass chaos and hysteria. It's literally every day. Exhausting. On the whistleblower report leading to this proposed law, Big Princess, Brandy, keep using the words common sense like the lawmakers in Olympia understand the meaning of those words. Yeah, the common sense to them is much different.
Mm-hmm.
Greg, if you want to shut down the fraud, shut down the NGOs. Once that money hits their hands, it is almost impossible to trace. Well, there has to be accountability. And that's what these bills have tried to do, is add layers of automatic accountability. Hey, you have there's automatic audits. Why are we not doing that? That makes literally no sense. And in these cases, I think it's because BIPOC. It's black, it's race. Yeah. You can't, you know, accuse them of racism. And how many people have accused me of racism on the internet over just doing that whistleblower report? Mm-hmm. Robert Parker, betting nothing will happen with the BIPOC scam. Remember, there are still hundreds of millions of dollars missing from the COVID Nigerian scam. Yep, never got that money back, some of it.
That's gone.
Dan B., ridiculous that such a race-based program should even be allowed. Why pass a bill to control an obviously money an obvious money grab for social justice warriors? Because I think all you can do as a Republican Olympia is try to make things better, right? You don't have any power at all. They're not going to repeal the program, so you can at least
on the
work
record.
To do it.
Get the other side on the record.
Yes.
Opposing common sense.
Yes, 100%. On the botched Brown University shooting update, Jeffy said, parent of a victim who had to listen to that. Can you imagine? No. Can you imagine being the parent of a victim and you have to watch that incompetence when you pay $70,000 a year for your kid to go to school and $70,000 a year and then your kid's murdered at school and they give a press conference like that and have no suspect after, what has it been, 4 days? That's insane. Yeah, and Mark points out, Mark Madison says, no cameras inside the building in 2025. No excuses. Right.
It's ridiculous.
I mean, you could put a camera on anything. So I don't understand what you're saying. It's got to be hardwired in or whatever. I understand equipping a new building with cameras much easier. But you have a $7 billion endowment. If public safety and the safety of students on campus is such a priority as you claim it is, then you'd also fit the old buildings with cameras too. You wouldn't just say, oh, safety stops at the door to this building.
Right.
It's so stupid.
Inside every entrance and exit, I guess. Yeah. But that's ridiculous.
Yeah. Just wild. Okay, Nicole, thank you very much. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Woke mayors hire woke police chiefs. That's why I hate whenever you have an appointee in a position like a sheriff or a police chief. I much prefer those to be elected positions because then you have a law enforcement official whose job should not be political, who's serving at the pleasure of a politician. So the politician is either going to pick someone who already aligns with their ideology, or they're going to pick someone who doesn't have a backbone to push back against their ideology because they want to keep their job. Those are really the only two options. And that's what's happening right now in Minneapolis. So the police chief there, Brian O'Hara, has been given some doozy press conferences with their super woke mayor. He compared illegals, as we head toward Christmas, he compared illegal aliens to Mary and Joseph.
It's especially personal to me, having been raised a Catholic, to be in a Christian church this morning as we are approaching Christmas. And I cannot help but think of what is happening in our city today and how that echoes with how outsiders have been treated for thousands of years, how Mary and Joseph themselves were considered outsiders and forced to stay in a barn. That's what we're getting ready to commemorate as Christians around the world, while all of this fear is happening right here in our town.
Now, I'm not a religious person. I don't necessarily know all the stories of the Bible very well, but I'm not sure you can compare Mary and Joseph being given a barn to stay in to the illegal aliens coming into our country, getting a free flight into our country, staying at five-star hotels in New York City, getting money to buy phones, money to buy food, free money for housing, free money for legal services, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think those two things are comparable. That has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. A reminder, tomorrow is our final live show of the year. Oh my gosh. I'm not going to say I'm excited. I am excited, but you guys know we need a vacation. However, that doesn't mean you're not going to see us. We have tons of great content coming up. We also have great episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. We will not miss any episodes. I'm not even going to tell you who our guests are. I don't want to scare them away or make them change their minds. But we have some great guests on Sundays of Subscribers. So make sure you stay in touch over the holidays by becoming a subscriber. UndividedPod.com, UndividedPod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show and we'll have constant updates, Sunday episodes, and then we have some special content we'll be posting there as well. But I'll still see you here tomorrow. Remind me, Nicole, to wear my special Christmas blazer.
Oh.
Last day of the year every year. Sometimes I forget.
Something special.
Special Christmas blazer tomorrow.
Good plan.
Okay, I'll see you then.